I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to All Stats Aren't We, a podcast in which Leeds fans cast their combined eye over goings on at Elland Road, giving scrutiny to the underlying statistics and tactical footings at work at Leeds United. I'm John McKenzie, the Liam Cooper groin injury of the podcast. Oh no. And I'm joined by the Diego Llorente groin injury of the podcast, Tom Alderson. Oh no. And finally, the presumable Robin Koch groin injury of the podcast. Please no, it's Joe Hill. Joe, how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm not bad, thank you. I'm glad to be footing the bill in the Darren Driver spot. I'm hoping to make it my own this week and, impose my personality on the Darren Driver spot, so hopefully I can do it justice.
You're just happy to get the 3 points, right?
Yeah, I'll take the points no matter what. Yeah.
Tom Alderson, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. I'm just looking forward to getting back to some proper football instead of this international rubbish. I know Joe loves it, but I just want to get these 2 weeks done as quickly as possible.
Yeah, you've got a bit of a beef with Gary Neville at the moment, I believe.
At every opportunity, I have a beef with Gary Neville, to be honest. He just doesn't know about it.
So I was, as we were saying before we came on, I was watching the Scotland game as a firm Scotland supporter. But I did notice the timeline erupting on Twitter when Gary Neville claimed that Calvin Phillips' trajectory of success actually has more to do with Gareth Southgate than it does for Marcelo Bielsa. But this got slightly tipsy Tom quite angry, didn't it?
I just can't believe that anyone would think that a player would learn more from Gareth Southgate than Marcelo Bielsa.
It's ludicrous.
It's like Gary Neville watched that England game, watched how rubbish they were, and still went, oh yeah, Phillips probably learned a lot from that. And I couldn't understand it at all.
Yeah, let's hope that he hasn't learned anything from that. I think that will be a takeaway from
that. He also probably had him at Four Parts last night, unteaching him everything that he's learned in the last 10 days.
Joe, you're a firm advocate of international football. Can you try and pull this one back for us? Is there anything good from this international break that we should be thinking about?
I was thinking about how I can justify it because I seem to be the only one part of All Stats Aren't We that actually quite enjoys international football. But the positive that I'm gonna tell you guys is that Alioski scored a penalty, Click got a fantastic assist for Lewandowski. And Phillips, I thought, actually played okay. Like he held his own in the England team, and he's looking like a good part of it, even if the rest of the team is falling to bits. So I think from a Leeds United point of view, there is still things to be happy with.
I think I saw the Alioski penalty described as calm, which I think is the only time anyone's ever described Alioski as calm ever.
It's not a bad penalty taker, to be fair, Alioski,
yeah.
Is he?
Yeah.
Maybe because I suspect even he doesn't know what he's about to do before he runs up, so it probably helps. To bring us back to earth with a bump, there are some negatives from the international break, namely in the form of those two injuries that I mentioned in the run-up. Liam Cooper and Diego Llorente having, from what I can tell, carbon copy injuries. How are we feeling about that as we go into the Wolves game?
It's worrying, but at least we've got a spare centre-back for a change. So we've got... We're not playing like Ayling and Phillips there. It doesn't sound like they're going to be out for too long, does it? Is it two games for Cooper, three for Llorente?
I think they said at least two games for Cooper, so I don't know how you would read that, but yeah. we'll see how that happens. But I guess the worrying thing with Cooper is that he's just so injury prone at the moment, isn't he? And as Tom Woodhead pointed out, actually, I don't think it was Tom Woodhead, but someone I was chatting to pointed out that everyone was saying, you know, it's good that we've got an extra centre-back, but he was like, well, it's not really any different because the backups got injured as well, so we're basically in exactly the same position, but no doubt everything will be fine. The other thing from the international break that we should probably talk about is coronavirus. Couple of news stories here. Football Insider, so take it with a pinch of salt, reckon that there was a Motherwell starlet, as they've called him. I'm not entirely sure what a Motherwell starlet is, but a guy called Sam Campbell was forced to postpone a trial because of COVID-19 tests. So the worrying thing there, I suppose, is that there is coronavirus around Thorpe Arch. In the wider picture, Portugal obviously announced that Ronaldo had a positive coronavirus test, and half of Wolves play for Portugal at the moment, or half of Portugal play for Wolves. I don't know which way around the causality goes. Also, Matteo Guendouzi was announced to have passed a positive test. I'm not sure how you're supposed to say that, but he has coronavirus, and he was playing, I think, for the under-21s of France. And another person who plays for the under-21s of France is Ilan Meslier. So how are we feeling about the potential lineup for Monday, given that, you know, anything could happen? We don't know who's in, who's out, or what's going on.
I think if there's a lot of... if it does spread to the Wolves team, then they've probably all got it, in which case the match is probably called off. I don't know what the protocol is on how many positive tests or anything, because it hasn't really happened yet, has it?
I don't think there is a protocol, is there? That's part of the problem.
No, they're just making it up as they go along.
So I believe that both teams will have a test on Friday night to determine who is and isn't positive. So we'll have a much better sense then. But it does feel as though it's inevitable that at some point we are going to lose some games to coronavirus this season. Tom, does that mean that international football is to blame? Is that a good reason why we shouldn't watch international football?
It does just seem a bit dumb that in the middle of a pandemic we're sending all these players. So like we kind of have the bubble, and then you just send everyone out all over Europe to like mix with other players and then come back. It just like, even if the football is rubbish, like it just seems like a dumb idea anyway.
You're really getting hammered here, Joe. Come on, pull us back.
I know.
What can you do to save this?
I mean, I do have to agree that yesterday it was pretty annoying watching England, and all they would talk about is how New Zealand have pulled out of this friendly fixture in the next break. But don't worry, England are reassuring everyone, we will find another opponent. And I think 99% of people, even people that like watching England, are just saying, don't bother, just, you know, keep it as the two Nations League games at a maximum. And don't bother with this friendly, because yeah, it's already sort of seeping in. Although I think I did read that the rest of the Portuguese team tested negative. I think they did another one after Ronaldo tested positive, right. And so
I think they played last night as well. So
yeah, they must be able to field enough players. So fingers crossed that the Wolves game still goes ahead.
The other thing we should talk about before we jump into the Wolves game on Monday, or not Wolves game on Monday, whatever transpires, just obviously a couple of days now before the domestic window closes. I think it might be tomorrow. Is it tomorrow? Or what day are we on? I don't even know what day we're on. Is it Thursday? Yeah, tomorrow.
Yeah, Thursday,
I think it
yeah.
ends on Friday. Do you think we're done? There's been rumours about Cantwell from Norwich, Buendia from Norwich, Livy Sibley from Derby. Joe, do you feel as though we're done now when it comes to bringing people in?
It certainly looks like it when you read things like Cantwell being valued at 25 million, which I did read, and obviously who knows if that's a rumour or if that's true, but that's just insane. Like Leeds should never spend that much money on Cantwell. As talented as he might be, that's just ludicrous money, and it would just strike a bit of last-minute desperation, I think, if we paid that on deadline day. I think Norwich have given him that price tag because they know that it is deadline day, and I don't think Leeds should fall into that trap.
The only potential, I think, for Leeds that we might see then is outgoings. There's been a few touted loan moves, notably Robbie Gotts to Lincoln. How do we feel about Robbie Gotts leaving, Tom?
I think he did need to play. Because we've only really seen him in the Arsenal game in the FA Cup, and he looked all right, but I think at this point he just needs regular playing time to improve. The thing with the players going out on loan is, I don't know if it's just Leeds fans have overrated the ability of like Gotts and Stevens, because I would have thought, from what I've heard about them, that they'd be going on loan to Championship clubs more than League One clubs. I thought they would have been at a higher level. Mm. So if he's going on loan to a League One club, has he actually got, is he going to develop enough that he will eventually be a Premier League standard? I'm not sure. Maybe it's just a move to like put up his value and then sell him to a Championship club next year.
It's a tough one, isn't it? We had a conversation, I think, in the group chat yesterday about this one. Is it better to just hook Robbie Gotts and just say, take 500,000 now and accept that that's that? I don't know where I would put him in the pecking order, but the problem is that, I mean, we're short in that position anyway in central midfield. And I feel like if they really wanted anyone, they would bring someone in. I mean, we saw Mikhail Cuisance was supposedly going to be there, and then you would have presumably someone like Adam Forshaw there ahead of him, and Jamie Shackleton then ahead of Gotts. So you're talking already like fourth choice for a position where actually amongst the first team you could spread around personnel as well. Like Click could play there. We know that Roberts and Rodrigo have been playing in those eight positions as well. So it's not looking like Gotts is going to get any sort of real game time there. And then the question is whether or not Premier League 2 is considered a good enough level for him to develop at. But yeah, between that and Lincoln, like, it's hard to see where this sort of huge gain in value is going to come from. If we're keeping him on in the hope that he becomes big enough for us to make some kind of profit from him, I don't see where that's going to come from. One final question, Joe. Is there anyone else you want to see going out on loan? Is there anyone that you think should be given the chance to go elsewhere, or are you just happy for it to stay as things are?
One player I did want to mention is Barry Douglas, because we've not really mentioned him, and obviously there's been talk of him going to Blackburn, I think it was. And I personally, I do quite like Barry Douglas. I think I have this soft spot for him because he's got promoted and with two clubs who basically haven't wanted him in the Premier League. And I think I almost feel a bit sorry for him because I think he has got some talent. I think he's good at set pieces and dead ball situations, but for some reason he just can't fit into the squad. So I think with a heavy heart, I wouldn't mind seeing Douglas leave if we got a decent enough fee for him.
Yeah, that is an interesting one, and there's certainly an area that we do need to sort out. I suspect that will be the project for next summer. I've just seen Phil Hayes just tweeted, Robbie Gotts loan to Lincoln City just about sorted. Medical and formalities today. Barry Douglas, future being decided. Watford and Blackburn still keen. So both of those are still ongoing. Right, let's talk about Wolves. We could talk about the transfer window all day long, and I've frankly had enough of talking about the transfer window to last me till at least January, when this whole rigmarole will start all over again. This week I was lucky enough to talk to Dave Azzopardi, who's the Wolves researcher for Football Manager and the founder of Talking Wolves, and this is what he had to say about Wolves. So Dave, hi, how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks. Are you?
Yeah, not so bad. Have you been enjoying the break that international football gives us, or are you one of these people that can't wait to get back into the domestic scene?
I'm normally not a huge fan of international football, but obviously this week we had Connor Cody score a goal for England, which is obviously huge for Wolves. I think he's the first player to do it since Steve Ball, which was a long time ago. So for Wolves fans, it's been pretty good this week, to be fair.
So let's talk a little bit about Wolves. You're going into your third season in the Premier League this time around.
Yeah.
If Wolves are suffering from third season syndrome, what does it look like?
I think a bad season for Wolves would be to not finish in the top half. The last 2 years, obviously, we finished seventh. And I think a lot of fans want us to see us get back into Europe again this season. And I think that's what the board would want as well. But it has been a bit of a shaky start. I think with a lot of teams, we've seen some strange results, seen a lot of goals so far. And I think that's mainly due to, obviously, the lack of pre-season that every team has had, really. There's been not much preparation. So it will be interesting. But yeah, for Wolves, I can't see us being one of those teams that are going to be in a scrap or anything like that. But I think a bad season for Wolves would be to finish in the bottom half. We just need a bit of consistency, start scoring more goals, getting more wins. It is going to be tricky this season to get top six, top seven. But as I say, ultimately, I think that's what the club do want this season.
You've already mentioned there's been a bit up and down so far. Yeah. There's obviously only four games, but two wins against Sheffield United and Fulham, both of whom are
struggling. I don't think either of them have won a point yet. And then the losses to Man City, which I guess is given, but then the outlier is the West Ham loss. How do you feel about the start to the season?
Yeah, like I say, I think I wasn't too sure what to expect this season, obviously with the lack of pre-season and with our pre-season, because there was an international break right in the middle of it. You know, most of our players, probably three quarters of our first team squad, weren't actually there for the majority of the pre-season. So when we went into that game against Sheffield United and won and scored two early goals, I was really pleasantly surprised. I thought it was going to be a tricky game. Like you say, the City game was expected, but the West Ham game was probably one of the worst performances we've had under Nuno. So that was a little bit of a shock, to be fair. But we bounced back against Fulham. It wasn't a hugely convincing performance, but I think those sort of games, even if you don't play great, but you can still get the 3 points, are crucial, especially for Wolves going into the international break. I think if we went into that game with a run of three games without a win, I think, you know, it could have had a lasting effect. So I wasn't too concerned about that performance. I just wanted Wolves to get 3 points. And to have 6 points out of our first four games, Wolves performed really, really poorly at the start of last season. And I think we're in a better place points-wise already than we were this time last season. So I think if we can come out the international break, scoring a few more goals, getting a couple of more wins, I think we should be fine. We should be in a better place.
Yeah, you've already mentioned there's been 2 7th place finishes in 2 Premier League seasons for Wolves. 7th place on the cards again, do you think? And you've mentioned that, you know, top half has to be the priority.
Yeah.
But 7th, do you reckon that's doable?
I think it's doable, but it is going to be tricky. I think it'll be, probably be, if we get it this season, I think it'll be one of the biggest achievements that we've had over the last 2 years. We saw last season that there were some top teams that were pretty poor last year, and we should have had 6th place. We threw that away, to be honest, on the last few games last season. As I say, I think 7th is doable, but it's going to be the toughest season yet. I think a lot of the teams are going to start being a little bit more consistent. Some of the big teams, that is. But then you've got other teams coming into the frame already. We've got Leeds that, you know, could possibly start rivaling other teams. You've got, even as crazy as Villa, have had a good start. You know, there's so many teams that, you know, you just don't know what to expect this season. Everton as well, of course. So it will be a tricky campaign. It's still on the cards. It's still doable. But we really need Wolves to just cut out the mistakes and start being more consistent and winning games that they should be winning.
You've already mentioned Leeds going up this season, and a lot of people seem to think there is sort of Wolves energy about Leeds this time around.
Yeah.
Would you agree with that? Are there similarities to Wolves' first season back in the Premier League and Leeds' first season?
I think so, yeah. Obviously, you guys, it's been a long time coming, and I think, you know, Bielsa that first season would have been disappointed that he couldn't achieve promotion. But you guys, you know, you've got that momentum from last year. You've taken it up to the Premier League in the first few games as well. You've shocked, you know, and given good games to the best teams in the country as well. So that's what Wolves are like that first year. You know, we stopped the big teams from gaining 3 points. We made it really difficult for them. I think Leeds were really unlucky that opening game against Liverpool. You know, and still scoring, what, 3 goals was it against them? So, you know, there is similarities for sure. You know, they've got that momentum. They've got some quality. They've brought in some great players as well. But still, Bielsa's kept that mix of some of the players that got you up last season. So I think it's a really good balance, good mix of the squad. And it could be a successful season for Leeds.
So this is the third season this time around for you in the Premier League. How do you think Wolves have developed during their time during the Premier League this time?
In terms of sort of, I know we're going to talk about possibly style and play later on, but in terms of tactically, you know, we've stuck with the same sort of mentality, the same sort of shape and so on. I think that the players have matured. You know, we got promoted with a lot of younger players, like your Ruben Neves type players and so on as well. And players like Connor Cody and even Ryan Bennett at the time, you know, when we came up, there were so many players that were good for Wolves. And I think it'll be probably similar for Leeds. There's probably players in the squad that got you up. You think, yeah, they did a great job in the Championship, but are they going to make the step up to the Premier League? And you're probably, as fans, say for argument's sake, Patrick Bamford, I'm sure a lot of your fans were possibly expecting for him to be replaced in the summer. But he's come in, he started the season, actually got a few goals. And I think Wolves fans were very similar with the likes of Connor Cody, Ryan Bennett. And for the first season, at least, with Bennett, they were fantastic and they did their job. And I just think Wolves, in terms of development, the squad has developed at such a quick rate. But some of these players that I think fans weren't expecting to keep up with that have done. Like Connor Cody is probably the best example of that, really. But the squad matured. The squad have learned how to play games out sometimes. We're not perfect. You know, we can't see, you know, we don't see out wins every week. But I think we've learned how to deal with teams and so on. And I think, just like, you know, watching the Tottenham Hotspur documentary, there was a game that Wolves played against them and Wolves just outfought them, really. And we ended up winning that game and Mourinho just credited Wolves for that. And I think that just says it all. You know, we've developed to the Premier League. We know how to see off games, and especially against the big teams. That I think Wolves, outside the top six, is probably one of the only games the big six really don't like to play.
Let's talk about the tactics then. You've said that tactically Nuno is still using very similar principles that he used when you first arrived. What are those basic principles behind his team, would you say?
So he always plays like a back three or back five, so three centre-backs and two wing-backs. Tends to play, you know, two central midfielders or three central midfielders, and then obviously two wingers and a striker or two strikers. He likes... defensively, you know, I think his mentality is probably make sure they don't score rather than let's score more than them. I think we always like to be defensively sound. You've got the back three, which tend to be very, very disciplined. If I'm honest, you very rarely see them sort of break out of that back three. Wing backs, you know, they like to bump up and down the wing. And I think that's why, obviously, with the likes of Matt Doherty over the last couple of years, you know, he got forward, got himself in the right areas and scored a lot of goals and got a lot of assists. Obviously, we've replaced him this season with Nelson Semedo from Barcelona. We had Johnny Otto on the opposite side, who was probably the more defensive of the two wing-backs, but still, going forward, did a stellar job. And it's almost as if every time you're defending, you've got a back five, but every time you're going forward, you've got a front five, because you've got your three up front, which are your two wingers and your striker, and your two wing-backs as well. So I think in phases, it is quite difficult to either attack or defend against, really. So, as you've seen, Raúl Jiménez has been the main man over the last two and a bit seasons. You know, him just at the heart, at the top of the pitch, the heart of the team, and the way he just brings other players into play. If he had a little bit more pace, I think, you know, he would just be so difficult to defend against, more than he is already. So, you know, the basic ideas are, you know, try and keep the ball. A lot of last season was very counter-attacking the last 2 years, but I know Nuno wants to change the system now and try and keep the ball more and attack a little bit more. There have been some teething problems with that in the first few games, as we spoke about earlier, but it will be interesting to see how Wolves can transform from this counter-attacking team over the last 2 years to a team that likes to hold the ball and starts putting teams to the sword and scoring more goals.
What about the new players that you brought in? Are you happy with the way that they're fitting into the system?
Yeah, I mean, there's two or three. You know, we lost Jota, we lost Doherty, probably the two biggest sales. But Nelson Semedo's come in. He's only had a couple of games and he's looked okay, to be fair. And I think with time, with him settling in, I think he'll be a player that can, you know, be a really good option on the right-hand side. A lot of the others, to be fair, haven't had a huge amount of game time. I'm looking forward to seeing them. Obviously, we spent a lot of money on Fabio Silva from Porto. But yeah, we sign a lot of younger players and it will be interesting to see how they develop. And I think a lot of them will get game time this season with rotation and so on. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it goes.
You mentioned before that Wolves play variously in a 3-4-3 formation or a 3-5-2. What is it that determines which one of these formations you play in?
It depends, really. I think last season, you never really knew which one we were going to go with. I think all the games that you always knew it was going to be a bit of a battle, like against the teams, the bigger teams in the league, we'd go with a 3-5-2 just to pack out the midfield a little bit. But this season, we played 3-4-3 in every game, even against Manchester City. Like I say, I think Nuno wants to change his style from counter-attacking almost to sort of possession-based. And you'd probably think a 3-5-2 would work with that a little bit better because you've got an extra body in midfield. But he has stuck with a 3-4-3, and I think that's just to have an extra man going forward. Mm. Some games it's worked, some games it hasn't, as we've seen so far. But yeah, at the moment, for the time being, it's a 3-4-3. But I think both formations blow hot and cold when one isn't quite working. I think he's always got the other one to fall back on. I think in terms of if we went into a game at the weekend and all the fans wanted to draw 0-0, you would go with a 3-5-2. But for something, if you want to go and win a game, it would be a 3-4-3 formation. The fans aren't huge supporters of the 3-5-2 because it is quite, unfortunately, quite a boring tactic, but it will get us results if we really want it. But yeah, in terms of attacking and actually trying to score goals, 3-4-3 is the way we've been going. And I think that's the sort of formation that Nuno will start with against Leeds.
So when it comes to the personnel in these two different formations, you mentioned obviously the 3-4-3 has basically two midfielders covering the whole of the central midfield area.
Yeah.
And then the 3-5-2 has the three midfielders in. What do the combination of midfielders look like in those two formations? Who does he usually go with in the two and then the three?
So the two, I'd say historically, would always be Neves and Moutinho. Mm. But the first few games this season, that hasn't quite worked out. So he's last game against Fulham, both wins actually, he started with Dendonka and Neves in the Fulham win and Moutinho in the Sheffield United win. I think that too works a little bit better because Dendonka's got a bit more of an engine on him, a little bit more height and strength. And obviously then you've got Moutinho or Neves, who's a slightly more creative player. So if it was a two, it'd be Neves or Moutinho and Dendonka. If it was a three, all three of them tend to play in there. So you've got Dendonka, Neves and Moutinho as well. So yeah, all three of them get a rotation. They all get a game either way, to be fair. We have brought in a couple of other players like Vitinha from Porto, who's like a number 10, which I think a lot of Wolves fans again want to play a 3-5-2, but instead of three central midfielders, almost change that into an attacking midfielder and two holding midfielders, which we haven't quite mastered yet. So if we went with a 3-5-2, it would be, as I say, Dendonka, Neves and Moutinho.
And then I guess the other person that we should talk about is Adama Traore.
yeah.
He variously gets played on the outside of the midfield four or as a striker in the 3-5-2. Do you have a preference for which one of those positions he plays in, and how do you feel about him as an attacking threat this season?
For me, I do prefer him as a right winger. We've seen him at striker, hasn't really worked. Seen him at right wing back, hasn't really worked. Unfortunately, he's just one of those players which physically and technically he's very, very good, but mentally he's just not quite there. It's almost as if he doesn't know where he is a lot of the time, especially when he's in the middle of the pitch. You know, you're relying on him either to hold up the ball and whatnot, or get him behind, and he just doesn't like doing that. He likes the ball at his feet and he likes running at players, and I think right wing is the best position for him to do that. The first two games where we didn't have a right wing back this season, he played right wing back, and it was very painful to watch at times, especially against Manchester City in the first half. But yeah, I always prefer him as a right winger. He came off the bench against Fulham. I don't mind that, you know, because we've got Neto and Pedence playing on the wings at the moment. I don't think either of them deserve to be dropped. So Adama coming off the bench for any team in the world is a scary prospect. And yeah, but for me as a fan, I do prefer watching him, and I think he's more comfortable as a right winger.
So in terms of how you think Wolves are going to set up against Leeds, which of those two formations do you think Nuno will go with?
I think it will be the 3-4-3. Like I said, I think, you know, that's the formation that we've gone with so far. I think in terms of lineup, I think the back, well, it'll be interesting actually with lineup, because he rotated the defence quite a bit against Fulham and it tended to work quite well. So it'll be interesting to see how he lines up. I think, you know, Patricio is a cert to start in goal. Raul Jimenez is a cert to start up front. It wouldn't surprise me to see Pedence and Neto start again and then Adama coming off the bench. But Adama's had a couple of cameos for Spain and looked impressive, so who knows. I think it'll be Dendonka and probably Neves in the middle again. But the wing-backs, I just don't know. I think Nelson Semedo will be a cert to start on the right. We did have a guy called Marcel coming from Lyon who played left wing back and impressed in the first game, but he's been injured since. So it'll be interesting to see if he's back because we played Romain Saiss there last time, and he's not a comfortable position for him, or he's not known to play there, but he did an all right job. So it will be interesting. I think the only positions really I can't predict is probably the back five at the moment.
How's the international break treated you as a team? Is there anyone who's going to be missing on the back of the international break?
In terms of injuries and stuff, I don't think so. We had a lot of the squad missing, though. Like, a lot of the squad were called up for their internationals. So we had England, Portugal, as you'd expect, Spain, Portugal under-21s, Portugal under-20s, I think. France under-21s as well. So we had quite a lot of players, Morocco, Mexico, a lot of players missing. But as far as I'm aware, there's no players injured from that. or touch wood, not so far anyway. As I say, the only other player that is a doubt and we haven't really got much information on is Marcel, the Brazilian defender who I mentioned earlier on. But I think if he's fit, he will probably get the nod to start against Leeds.
And the questions I always ask people in this section is, which player on your team do you think needs to perform well, or which players need to perform well in order to beat Leeds?
Raul Jimenez, I think if he's on his game, in front of goal, it's going to be very, very difficult for Leeds to stop him. There's some games where Raul is just unstoppable. He's on fire. I think Sheffield United, where we won the first game of the season, he just looked so sharp. And I was really, really impressed. A few of the other games, he looked a little bit tired, if I'm honest. So it'll be interesting. If he can turn up and get other players into play, I think it'll be crucial. If Adama Traore comes on and his head is screwed on, he's, as I said earlier, he's so difficult to defend against and he'll cause Leeds nightmares. So if Adama starts, if Jimenez, which he will start, if both of them can have their head screwed on and full focus on this game, it'll be very, very difficult for Leeds to get something from the game. But it's if those two can turn up.
And how do you expect the game to go in terms of the flow?
It'll be interesting. I think Wolves will allow Leeds a lot of the ball in the early stages of the game. We tended to do that just almost to try and suss out the opponent, see how they're setting up and see where we go from there. And then Wolves will slowly grow into the game in the first half. If Wolves can get an early goal, I think they'll be able to defend that quite well. But last season, we struggled to score in the first half full stop. I think we had the smallest percentage of goals in the first half out of any team in the league. And we were forced to come from behind quite a lot of times as well. So it will be interesting to see how it goes. Leeds have started off well. They'll have the momentum from last season, which I said earlier. They've got the high morale at the moment. They've got some good players. And that Bielsa style of play, it'll be really interesting to see how this game goes.
Well, Dave, it's always a pleasure to chat to you. If anyone wants to follow your stuff online, what's the best place for them to head?
Well, you can check out Talking Wolves. That's the page I run. So it's on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram and YouTube. And like I say, just talk about Wolves, really. Match reviews, previews, all sorts. So yeah, check it out.
Well, thanks so much again. And hopefully you'll be able to enjoy the game on Monday.
Yeah, my pleasure, man. Thanks a lot.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So that was Dave Azzopardi, Wolves researcher for Football Manager and founder of Talking Wolves. Joe, what did you make of that?
It was really interesting. There was quite a few things that I took from it that that really interested me. The first of which was that in a way they're almost like Man City in that they're sort of going through a phase of maybe changing up the way that they play. Like Dave was saying, they want to be a bit more attacking, they want to control possession a bit more. And I just wonder if that's partly the reason why they haven't got off to a flying start in a similar way to Man City, in that they're still figuring things out. They don't really know what their best formation is, which was pretty clear from the interview with Dave. So I'm wondering if Leeds can kind of exploit those holes that will be generated from that sort of, indecision.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Because I think Wolves now have been in the division long enough that they're no longer the sort of kooky promoted team who've done well. And the expectation now is that they sort of develop some sort of tactical identity. And one of the things that I found just talking to Dave, but also preparing the tactics thread for this week, is that it's actually like Wolves tactically aren't that interesting in terms of what they're trying to do going forward. They're very, very good defensively. They're very solid defensively. They won't give any gaps. Their structure in the back three and then the midfield in front of it, or the back five, however you look at it, is exceptional. You're not going to see them giving away big chances. But the payoff for that is that maybe when it comes to transitioning down the field, they're not quite so dangerous as they would want to be. And that was sort of what Dave was talking about when he was saying, like, how do you retain that defensive solidity, but also retain possession a little bit more? Don't just be a counter-attacking team. Get players in advanced positions without feeling as though you're just sort of lumping the ball long to Raul Jimenez and Adama Traore, or getting Adama Traore to use his insane dribbling to great effect. Tom, what about yourself? What did you make of what Dave had to say?
Yeah, it was. I kind of picked up similar to what Joe did. And also I think the reason they're struggling this year, they've lost Doherty and Jota, who were like two of their probably their longest serving players. Like, they came up from the Championship with them. And whilst you say like Semedo is probably an upgrade, they're probably combined with like the changing of going from like counter attacking to possession, and then this changing players, it probably explains their sort of not bad start to the season, but just sort of bumpy start to the season. Best way of explaining it.
How are we judging this game? It's an interesting one, isn't it? Because we've had some games where they've either been sort of we don't really need to win, so games against City and Liverpool, and then games where, to be honest, we probably had to do okay. I mean, it's easy to say that in hindsight with Sheffield United, because Sheffield United are a good team, and that game could easily have gone either way. But with Fulham, we really had to win that game. With Wolves, it's sort of a slightly different prospect, isn't it? Because they are considered a team who should be challenging for at least Europe. You would think, and sort of seventh placed league finishes in 2 years since they came up, you would expect them to be sort of targeting at least the top half. So how are we viewing this game, Tom? It's not exactly must win, but it's also not exactly okay to lose either, is it?
Yeah, it's difficult. This is sort of the games that will probably decide. Well, assuming we stay up, which is a bit early to call that, but like where we finish, sort of mid table. Cost Wolves aren't firing on all cylinders at the moment. It would be quite nice just to get something out of the game. But it's one of those that if we play well and we don't come away with anything, the fans would probably be like, oh, that's fine. We gave a good account of ourselves. So it is difficult, but it would be quite nice to get something out of the game.
I think the fact that it's at home as well changes it up for me, because, you know, away at Molineux, you say, okay, if we get beat, then we get beat. But just all the games at Elland Road, you never want to lose, especially, you know, this isn't a big six side, as we've been hearing a lot about the big six. But, you know, Wolves at home, you see this fixture and you think, we can do this. We can get a point out of it. And actually, I think personally, I'd be a little bit disappointed if we did lose.
Yeah, no, for sure. We've already mentioned the coronavirus angle to this. Do we think that it's a tendency or the possibility that this game could just be a little bit batshit in terms of we don't know who's going to show up and we don't know who's going to show up for us either? We're obviously going to have a weakened defence, however you look at it, at least in terms of what the starting 11 is. I'd be quite happy with Robin Koch and Pascal Strouk, because I think they were fine against Liverpool anyway, right, within reason. But is this just a sort of hit and hope game for us off the back of the coronavirus aspect of it, Joe?
No, I wouldn't say necessarily that it's hit and hope. I think it's something that we are just going to have to get used to, is that players are going to be out the squad occasionally. Liverpool have already had it with Mane, who's one of their key players, and they just had to deal with it. So I think that whether it's that Melier is out for us, which we've not really heard anything that he is going to be, but is a possibility, obviously. I think it's just something that we're going to have to adapt to. And, you know, I still feel exactly the same in that this is a game that we can win if we play well, and that we should be winning.
How do we feel about Wolves? We've already mentioned that Wolves are sort of a team who sit back and maybe look to decompress after being sort of defensively solid. How do we feel about them? One of the things that I've found just sort of preparing a tactical preview is that I don't really find that much interesting to say. Now, maybe that's because I'm not as biased towards the defensive aspects of the game as I should be. But how are we feeling about Wolves tactically? Do we think this is going to be a game where they sit back and look to decompress? Or do you think that they will try, as Dave said, to sort of build possession and hold the ball a little bit more? How do you feel about that, Tom?
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see if they try and commit to this move towards possession football, because we seem to be trying to well, if it was like from we saw the City game, like just transition quickly. Mm. That style of game would probably suit Wolves as well, because like they were in their last two seasons probably one of the best teams in the league, attacking it that way. So even if you throw in like the coronavirus aspect as well, and then two teams that love to break quickly, it could actually just be an absolute batshit game.
It's quite interesting because sort of what Dave said as well is that they can have a tendency to just rely on Traore and Jimenez just having moments, basically just being great. And Traore, we've obviously seen it lots in the past two seasons. In a 1v1 scenario, he's winning 90% of the time and he's getting a good ball into the box, and Jimenez is great at finishing that. But aside from that, tactically, there isn't anything mad that we'll have to deal with, such as the Sheffield United overlapping centre-backs or the pressing ability of Man City. I think it's going to be more keeping individual players quiet. And if we can keep Jimenez quiet, for example, and Traore, then I think we'll have a shot.
So the big tactical decision is, well, at least for Wolves, is what formation to play. There's these two possibilities, the 3-4-3 or the 3-5-2. And one of the impressions I got from Dave was that there's no clear indication tactically why they might choose one over the other. He sort of suggested that if they wanted to be more attacking, they would go for the 3-4-3 because it gives you more width in the attack, and also gives you the chance to get an extra body forward in those attacking phases. But you then got the impression that against Fulham last time out, they went with the 3-5-2, which seems maybe the more counter-attacking defensive setup. Now with Fulham, we know that Fulham are a possession side as well, and so maybe the plan there for Nuno was to sit deeper, sort of bypass Fulham's high press and just go long to Jimenez and Traore. So maybe that's why we saw the 3-5-2. But the week before they lost 4-0 to West Ham, having played the 3-4-3, and that I think that really gives you the sense of just how weak the central midfield can be if you lose that control, if you lose that extra player that you have there in the 3-5-2. Joe, how do you feel as though Wolves are going to approach this? How do you feel as though they'll set up of those two? I don't think there's a clear answer to this, but what's your gut?
Yeah, it's quite a difficult question, because they probably would have seen the Man City game and seen what we can do to teams that come out and try and attack us, especially against one of the best teams in doing that in Man City. So that maybe leans me towards saying they'll start with the 3-5-2. Again, they're away from home, so maybe they would be happy with a point, because you know they've seen what Leeds can do. They know that we're a decent side. So I think as a gut instinct, I would probably say the 3-5-2.
It's weird because like the 3-5-2 when attacking, they kind of switches to a 3-4-3 anyway. Something Dave said was about if they play 3-5-2, it'll be Neves, Moutinho, and Dendonka, but we haven't actually seen that this season, I don't think. Or it's been, is it Neto? That's kind of played midfield, but he's kind of going forward anyway. So, like, it's a 3-5-2 in defence, 3-4-3 when they attack. So, I think, definitely in attack, we'll definitely see them play 3-4-3. It depends. It'll be interesting to see how much respect they show Leeds, whether they then defend in a 3-5-2 or they just get with Neves and Moutinho or Dendonka when defending.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting observation, and then they sort of just decompress by the midfielder sort of pushing out wide as well. In terms of how we approach this tactically, then I think the big question then is how do Leeds exploit the system if Wolves only go with a two-man midfield. Leeds, as we know, are a team who themselves actually leave the centre quite open a lot of the time. They do a lot of their build-up play through the full-back areas and the wide areas. They do use the middle as a sort of transitional space, so you'll often see the ball sort of played to a central player who then finds another player on the wing with the sort of third-man run. We see that happening a lot. Do you think that we will see Marcelo Bielsa try to exploit the fact that Wolves only have two central midfielders if they only have two central midfielders? How do we think that this will look tactically for Leeds in response? Joe, we'll go with you. Sorry.
I think that is something that Bielsa can exploit, definitely. Something that I was thinking about earlier when Dave was mentioning that Traore is maybe a bit mentally and positionally weaker. I guess he's talking about defensively and sort of shape-wise. One thing that led me to go on to think was that Dallas can really exploit Traore in that sense. We know that Traore and Dallas are probably going to be playing in similar positions. And if Dallas can cut inside and sort of go into his midfield role at times, I think we'll see Traore not knowing what to do and won't be able to pick him up. And we can weirdly overload the midfield, which isn't something that we've seen that much. We normally overload on the wings. But if they only play the two central midfielders, then it would be quite nice to see Dallas stepping inside and sort of causing a bit of chaos in that area.
There's loads of questions that I'd love to ask Marcelo Bielsa before a game like this. I mean, one of the questions would be, like, how do you prepare for a game where you're not entirely sure which formation they're going to play? Do you just sort of approach this in the same way? I mean, as Tom said, there is an overlap between the 3-4-3 and the 3-5-2. Do you have like two scenarios in murder ball, like where one half you play against a 3-4-3 and then the second half you play against a 3-5-2 and you just sort of hope that the team can sort of get their heads around it as you go? I think Traore is an interesting player as well that you mentioned, because Traore can play as one of the two strikers in a 3-5-2, or he can play as the outside player in a 3-5-2 in a midfield, or he can play as the outside player or the wing back in a 3-4-3, or the outside forward in a 3-4-3. And obviously, Traore is a terrifying player anyway. I mean, this is a guy who's making over 10 dribbles a game at a success rate of 70%, which is elite. He probably is the best dribbler of the ball ever. How do you think Leeds United will cope with this? Because obviously, we're going to have Stuart Dallas on that side probably. How should Stuart Dallas think about defending against Traore, Tom?
It does worry me, the thought of Dallas against Traore. That's probably the thing that scares me most for the game on Monday. I honestly have no idea how to stop Traore. and Stuart Dallas probably doesn't want to know my thoughts on it. I'm actually completely stumped. I don't know how to stop him.
I think one way that we could potentially, that Dallas could potentially keep him quiet is by looking to which side he normally likes to go to. This is just sort of speculation from me, but from watching Traore a little bit over the past couple of seasons, it seems like he always tries to get to the byline. He'll always try and get onto his right foot and just dink a little cross in to Jimenez. So if we can get someone to sort of almost double up on him, and Dallas can make sure that he doesn't get to the byline no matter what, he'll have to sort of cut onto his left, which he isn't so good at crossing on his left foot. If at that point we can sort of get Phillips or the spare man to sort of come across and shield that area, then I think that could be a possibility of keeping him quiet, because I think if he gets to the byline, then you've had it. Then there's a great cross going in and it's incredibly dangerous from that position.
I think it'll be easier if Traore is playing on the right of like a midfield four, because if he's playing like on the right of a three and then you've got Semedo backing him up as well, then you'd think that Harrison and, boy, you'd imagine Harrison on the left and Dallas would be in for a pretty rough day on that side. Mm.
Yeah, as I said in my Yorkshire Evening Post column this week, I think the trick with Traore is to just try and get him into areas where he's going to be least useful in terms of like his efficiency at finding teammates, which is, I guess, easier said than done. But yeah, you're trying to keep pressure on him, knowing that he's going to get around you, but forcing him out into wider areas, making sure that you've got coverage so that if he does get past someone, that they can then force him out wide as well. Because as we've mentioned, there's an extent to which Wolves are dependent on that ability to dribble as a creative outlet for their team, and that sort of combination of Traore and Jimenez is an important one for them. So I think Leeds will be taking into account like the ways in which they can make that as difficult as possible, and hopefully that will stymie Wolves as a creative unit. We need to talk about formations, because I think the concept of a 3-4-3 actually poses problems, or a 3-5-2 in many respects poses problems for how Leeds will approach this, at least in terms of quote-unquote formations, whatever you want to talk about in terms of structure. We know that Leeds have a plus one superiority at the back and a minus one inferiority at the front. So in a 3-4-3, you would expect there to be a back four and a front two. In a 3-5-2, you would expect to have a back back three in the front one. Am I right? No, I'm getting completely confused here. Well, yeah, so it's a back five, so you'd want to have your inferiority would be two. So in the 3-5-2, it seems obvious that you would play like we did against Sheffield United, right? With a 3-5-2 to match up to it. So you've got 3-on-2, 3-on-2 at both ends, and then matching up in the middle. How do you think that we would respond to a 3-4-3 where it seems to me that the obvious matchup would be to play a 4-4-2? Do you think that will be used, Tom? And do you think we will use Rodrigo potentially as a second striker?
Yeah, I think we'll either see, even though I think Hernandez is fit, but I think he'll probably stick with either Roberts or Rodrigo because he kind of gives him the option to switch between having someone a bit more in midfield or someone who can play as a second striker. In terms of the defence, I'd quite like, because there's been talk, of course we've only got the one first team centre-back, of like Cock moving over to left, Ayling to centre-back, but I think having Ayling at right-back and then like Stroik and Cock, it gives you the option to switch between a back three and a back four, so we can kind of adjust to whatever way Wolves set up.
Yeah, I completely agree with Tom. I think it would be nice to see Rodrigo in the number 10 slash sort of second striker role that we've seen him do a little bit. I really want him to start the game as well. I don't think Roberts has been too good the past couple of games, and I think it's time for Rodrigo to get his start. And the same really with the back four slash back three. I think keeping that same lineup in Ayling and Dallas as the fullbacks, and then Cock and Stroik, I think that's the best option, and it gives us the most versatility to sort of adapt during the game.
And what about the back three? What would that look like?
I would personally like to see Ayling, Cock and Stroik, and then you're looking at Dallas and I guess sort of Click, Costa sort of all rotating to kind of play in the wing-back roles. And then obviously going forward, Ayling can really progress and do his own thing and get up the pitch. That's one of the things I really like seeing actually with Leeds' back three, is I think Ayling's fantastic in that position, because when we have the ball, he almost plays like a regular fullback, and he's not afraid just to get up the pitch and make overlapping runs. And I think that can be really exciting for us.
Let's talk about the wider squad selection then. So ahead of the back three or four, how do we see them lining up, Tom?
So yeah, I think it'd be Phillips as usual, and then probably one of Rodrigo or Tyler Roberts, obviously Click. It'd be interesting. I don't know if he'll... It's probably a bit early for Rafinha, so it'd probably be Costa and Harrison who started the season well, and then Bamford up front, you'd imagine.
Any differences there for you, Joe?
No, I'd say exactly the same thing. And actually, I think one player that I'm really excited to see is Costa, because I think he's got some space to exploit down Wolves' left-hand side. Dave was kind of saying that they've not really settled on someone there. They kind of had Vinegar sort of playing there, and they had Size playing there, and that's sort of an area of uncertainty for Wolves. So I'm really looking forward to seeing Costa on that right-hand side, and hopefully he can get some good 1v1 scenarios and sort of show his ex-teammates what he's now made of.
And which players are we expecting good performances from if we are to beat Wolves, Tom?
Yeah, I agree with Joe on Costa, and then whoever... Assuming it's Stroik playing, I think he's going to have a good day to keep Jimenez quiet, because I think Jimenez is a really good player, and one that if he keeps quiet normally, that means Wolves are having a bad day, because Cox kind of played as the free man, hasn't he? So it'd be Stroik probably the one that's marking Jimenez. So yeah, I think whichever centre-back is marking Jimenez will have to have a good day if we're going to get something out of this game.
Yeah,
I'd also like to see Bamford do some good.
Do
I'd
some
like
goals.
See him, yeah, put it in the net. Yeah, I think he's got a good opportunity. I was watching the West Ham Wolves game, and there was lots of aerial faffing around from Wolves. They didn't look solid at all, and I actually think that that's something that Bamford can exploit, because he's been the past few games, he's got two or three decent headers every game and should really be putting him on target. And so that's my hot take, I suppose, is that Bamford's going to score a headed goal.
I think Rodrigo will be interesting to see as well, because, you know, I think the games where he's played the best have been the ones where he's been able to sort of play as a second striker, get a little bit closer to Bamford. We saw it happen quite well against Sheffield United, but this is going to be another game where he's given the chance to support Bamford and look for the two of them to look for those channels between the three centre-backs in a back three. And so I'm looking forward to seeing if he has another good game. His trajectory has been pretty good so far, assuming that he comes back from international duty intact.
It'd be interesting to see if he can do it from the start of the game as well, because he's only he's come on at half time in both games he's played in the league, or maybe like the 60th minute.
Yeah.
Has he not started one game?
I think it was in the cup. Was it against Hull?
Right. Okay,
yeah, I don't think he started. Right, yeah.
He's either come out at half time or he came on against.
It was against City when he scored. He came on at
55th minute, didn't he? Yeah.
And then scored a few minutes after.
In terms of how the game will flow on Saturday, Tom, how do you think that the game will unfold? Do you think what's the sort of general unfolding in the game going to look like?
So I think Dave said that like Wolves tend to spend the start of the game figuring out the opposition, and that's something we see from Leeds quite a lot as well. So the first 15 minutes, I can imagine it'll be Bielsa trying to work out what Wolves are playing. And then once that's figured out, I do think that there is a high chance that this just turns into a game of two teams just playing basketball, and it could potentially go a bit crazy. I don't know if I want that or not, but it would be a good game from a neutral point of view.
I think if Wolves get the first goal, then it's going to be tough for us. I think this is kind of what Dave was saying as well, that if they get 1-0 up, they could quite happily go to the 3-5-2 and just play defensively. We saw it against Sheffield when Wolves played Sheffield United in the first game. They went 2-0 up in the first 10 minutes or something and just coasted through the rest of the game, basically. So I won't be happy if they get the first goal, because I think it will be just one of those games where Leeds have to break them down. But on the other hand, I think if Leeds score first, it has the potential to be quite an open game, and hopefully one that we can exploit as Wolves come out at us from a losing position.
It does have the possibility of being the first game where teams have really sat deep against us this season, I feel. And so it should be interesting to see how we cope with that. Although it did sound as though Dave was saying that he feels as though they will try and come out at us a little bit more. But if we do see Wolves sitting back in a 3-5-2, which they did against Fulham, who, let's face it, I mean, Fulham do try and play possession-heavy football. There's the possibility that they could come out in that 3-5-2, sit deep, and then just look to decompress quite quickly. And so this could be the first chance that we have of sort of breaking a team down from a deep position. So I do think it's going to be a fascinating game on Monday. So there you have it. That's our preview of the Wolves game. Keep an eye out for our tactics thread, which will be going up on Twitter hopefully later. If you like our content and you want to get more of it, we are happy to say that we have a Patreon account, which gives us the chance to put out bonus material and content for you guys. We have loads of stuff up there. We have bonus podcasts, we have written stuff, and we also put a lot of video stuff out there. I am hopefully going to get a Jan Pervaeder analysis piece out on there before the end of the week. If any of that sounds interesting to you, head over to our Patreon at www.patreon.com/allstatsaren't we and have a look and see what's going on over there. Maybe consider subscribing. Three people who have done just that this week are Michael Kerr, Paul Jenkinson and Jay Hart. So thank you guys for getting on board. And we'll be back on Tuesday with a review episode. It's quite the turnover next week. I think we're playing Monday and Friday, so we'll have a couple of podcast episodes in quick succession then. But until then, enjoy the game and enjoy the week, and we'll be back then. All that remains for me to do is say thank you, Joe.
Thanks very much.
And thank you, Tom.
Cheers.
And we'll see you on the flip side.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.